And good morning and welcome to The Garden Show. I'm Molly Kabler in this Wednesday morning.
And I'm Kitty Labonte. So nice to be here again. It sounds like we had a request.
We did. We've had a request for the top 10 plants to grow in Sitka. And we have had these sorts of shows in the past. We're delighted to have a request for a show in particular. But what we had really done was divided into top 10 vegetables, top 10 flowers. So we're going to start this morning with top 10 flowers. And as you might imagine, there's some controversy around this.
Huh. Yes, there is. I mean, it's not too extreme. Molly and I both made our lists independently just to see like where we were with our top 10. And then just for fun, I looked up our old top 10 list that we had created before. And surprisingly, they're pretty consistent. I was like impressed with us. I was like, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and that was in 2012, it looked like.
Okay.
Holy smokes. So we have that list for you. And number one on all three lists. I'm going to put it as all three lists.
All right. We're suddenly times three.
Okay. So number one is the blue poppy.
Right. It is such an amazing plant that many gardeners around the world, quite honestly, wish they could grow. And luckily for us in Southeast Alaska, much of Southeast Alaska, we have exactly the climate in which it thrives.
It's perfect. So we're talking about Mecanopsis, and there's a few different species, and some looks like some controversy about which species is which or whatever, but it doesn't matter. Get the Mechanopsis, but you don't. The one caveat is if you buy Mechanopsis cambrica, that is the Welsh poppy, and it is yellow, so it needs to be kind of in the blue poppy range. So double check that. But I suspect if you ask at a nursery, and you say you want the blue poppy Mechanopsis, they will get you the right one.
Actually, they probably won't, because
really?
Most of the time, blue poppies are not available through commerce because they're notoriously finicky. So it's not that they would give you the wrong thing. They won't have it.
They may not have it.
Ask your neighbors and friends and fellow gardeners to share their blue poppies with you, because it's number one beloved flower, I think, in Sitka. Arguably, of course, each of us have our own taste.
Right.
So what's number two?
Number two for me, and then I realize this is where the difference starts. And number two for me is not a big surprise. It's daffodils. I mean, daffodils to me are just like the deer usually don't eat them. They come back year after year, at least in my yard, without any sort of fuss. They come in a variety of shapes and sizes and bloom times. I still have some blooming. So daffodils are spectacular. And I might add that they were number two on the other list, too.
All right. So daffodils are big. I have a daffodils and plus in my
yes.
number two, and that's crocuses. I think crocuses mm-hmm. are such an incredible
yes.
Early spring bulb, so easy in our climate.
Yeah.
And when you're hungry for early flowers, the crocuses are pretty reliable that way.
Yeah, I guess spring bulbs in general, particularly crocus and daffodils, because they come up every year. I really like that. I mean, some tulips do, but tulips are not as reliable in my garden, and deer love them.
Right.
So that's what puts them down a little bit, although I love tulips.
So next on my list is the Sitka rose, and I did a little crowdsourcing to find out, you know, what others think, and the Sitka rose, it comes up over and over.
Mm-hmm.
It's a flower, yes, it's really more a shrub. We're not going to get technical, but it is pretty much, I mean, it says Sitka in it. We're including any of the single petaled pink scented style mm-hmm. of roses. Some call them Nootka, some call them Sitka. It really doesn't matter. It's those really hardy, tough rugosa style roses that smell terrific and are very easy, too invasive, in fact,
yes.
grow in our part of the world.
Yeah, and I think there is a difference between Nootka and rugosa roses, and you want the rugosa variety. The rugosas don't have as big and gnarly of thorns, and they don't have super long sharp stems. The rugosas have those kind of nice, kind of wrinkly looking leaves. They take some good pruning. You can get doubles in those too. And they do. They're really fragrant and nice. So I would go for the rugosa rose, for sure. It's not on my list, but I was like, yeah, I was being very narrow in my focus.
So what's next on your list?
Next on my list is actually nasturtiums.
Mine too.
And nasturtiums are one of those plants, they don't have this beautiful fragrance or, you know, but they have bright colors usually or cool variegated leaves. They grow easily from seed. They will take over places in a nice way, and then they're gone. That's what I do kind of like the big show, and then you don't have to fuss with them. They're done. You can eat the flowers, you can eat the leaves, you can just enjoy the colors, and they bloom late in the season. They'll bloom through September if you take care of them.
They're easy to work with kids on because the seeds are so big and wonderful. And if you pick seeds just as they're falling off the vine in Sitka, anyway, you can dry them and save them over and grow them again the next year. So what's not to like about
a
non-picky plant, edible, easy to grow, save the seeds the next year. You're good to go. And nasturtiums.
I really like the Empress of India variety because I like that deep color of the flowers, and I like that blue. It kind of has a blue-green leaf to it, but also really like the Alaska mix. I like the variegated leaves. They just look really attractive, but there's like so many different kinds. Next, that was actually number 5 on the previous list. And this is a little random. So my next one is clove pinks. And I bet it's, I don't think it was on your list.
It didn't make my list. So we'll balance that out with the one that's on my list that's not on your list. And that's the Livingstone daisies.
Right.
And those are those brightly colored, they're both really brightly colored plants, tend to be in the pink hues, although Livingstone daisies can be the orange side, the white side, but clove pinks at least have a beautiful scent.
Oh my gosh, they have a gorgeous scent. So they have kind of, they look like a mini carnation, but they form these nice mats in appropriate places. And the appropriate place can be a pretty ratty spot, really. Mine's just kind of overflowing a garden wall. And the foliage is kind of that gray-green, which looks fairly attractive, I think, because it adds a different color of green to the wild mass of green we have going. And then the flowers are, mine are a light pink. The flowers aren't huge. They're showy, but they're not like, woohoo, there's the pinks. But it's the smell. Oh my gosh, it is the smell. So you want to plant them someplace that it's not too big of a nose reach to get your face in there because, oh, it's so good.
So we'll give just a little tiny bit of extra time to Livingstone daisies in fairness. But they look like a succulent. They are annuals. You have to buy them every year. But when it is sunny, they are the beacons of the sun. They're bright, and they only open in the sun. So I find them very entertaining.
I love those things. I just don't get them every year. Some years I go, oh, yeah, I'm going to go for it. Other years, but my clove pinks are perennial, so they're always there. So what's next on your list?
Well, erythronium is the next one.
Yes.
And I know we all three lists have this flower. Mm-hmm. And most people are like, what the heck are you talking about? Because they're rarely for sale.
Yeah.
So you don't find them if you're a browser at, you know, the nursery or whatever. You really don't even see them much in the catalogs or anything like that.
You see them in like specialty bulb catalogs.
Right. And so what they are, they're the glacier lily or the
trout
lily, golden pagoda or something is the odd name that the one we grow most of the time is. But it's a bulb. They do incredibly well here. They're tough as nails. They're a beautiful yellow. You know, they look like a little lily.
They're
almost
just beautiful.
They grow, you know, 8 to 15 inches high, and they expand readily without being obnoxious.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Usually dividing mine in like, okay, where am I going to put the next batch?
Yeah.
But not in a bad way. I'm not like pulling them out by the handfuls going, get out of here.
Right. And so trout lilies.
Yeah. And they have they have that lily form and that they have the 6 petals. And then they're just reflexed or pushed back at the tip, and they hang down, and they're just, oh, they're so lovely.
Yeah. The other thing that's nice about them is they bloom early, early-ish, and then the foliage finishes up and is gone completely. And so there's lots of room in your garden for things to come up and have a later flowering period, right, take over that space.
Yeah, I just keep spreading mine down the trail. Okay, so we all agreed on that one. Yay. So my next one, I think, is only on my list, and that's sweet peas. Annual sweet peas. I love them. Again, I really like fragrant flowers. So this is one that if you're growing, most varieties are now, again, fragrant. It seemed like for a while the fragrance kind of disappeared in what was being sold, and now they're back. And they're just, they're delightful if you have a good spot for them. So this year, I created a spot. I decided I could grow them just like my peas that I grow for vegetables. And I built a row in the back, you know, had a little fence in the back of one of my vegetable beds. And one of those rows is snow peas and the next row is sweet peas.
Nice.
Because I was like, you know, they can mix in. We can have flowers and vegetables growing together. But yeah, the fragrance is just, it's to die for.
So probably one that's on my list that's not on your list to bounce this out are just those little trailing, and sometimes they come in trailing and compact, and those are the lobelias.
Mm-hmm.
They're an annual. You buy them usually in a six-pack. They come in shades of white, kind of pink, and then to the light blues and the deep blues. Mm-hmm. But I can't get enough of those really deep blue ones.
Oh, yeah.
So those are on my list for every year to get those
not
in
my
deck
list,
boxes.
But I buy them every year.
Right.
And because they are beautiful. I agree. The dark blues for me are just like, make my little heart sing. And they look really cool with yellow begonias. Very nice.
Okay. So going on, one I know that's on all the lists, I think, is the calendulas.
Yes, it is. No, but it should be.
We do change our minds. So calendulas are a little like the nasturtium in that they have relatively big seeds and they're super easy and fast to go from seed to bloom. So these are, in our climate, they're mostly annuals, although they will self-seed. And if we have a super mild winter, occasionally a plant will even winter over. But mostly we grow them as annuals. You could collect seed and save it as well. That I love that about calendulas.
Mm-hmm.
They come in a variety of fiery colors. They're either yellow, orange, red-orange, yellowy-red, those are the color palettes, and they're fairly easy to grow here. They don't need lots of sun, although they like sun, and they're pretty quick. You could start seed now, even, which is late, not too late, and have them bloom by the end of the summer.
Yeah, in fact, is that might not be a bad thing. If you bought a six-pack of them, that, you know, they may those may fade over time. You have a new set coming on. I really like the touch of red ones and then the neons because they have that. It's like orange with the red backing, and they just glow. And the year before, they all overwintered. Last year, they didn't overwinter.
Right. I know on if there's a week or two on into the summer when it's pretty rainy and gray, you know what just pops out of the green of the garden is those bright orange and yellow calendulas. They're incredible.
Yes, I totally agree. Good plant to have on there. This one is for sure on all the lists, and that's the primroses.
Yes, it is. And it's kind of a cheater because there's so many primroses. You can put down primroses, and you're actually talking about flowers that bloom very early, medium, and really almost to the end of the summer.
Yeah. Yeah, so I have two different, we started out, I don't know, when was it? In April, with one set of primroses blooming. And as we've gone through the gardening season, there's been this steady progression of just stunning primroses. And now I have these beautiful little white ones that are blooming. And I have some tall, and I always forget the name of it.
Japonicas, maybe?
Yeah, with the candelabras.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and I just love that. So you get, you know, one whirl or circle of flowers, and then it grows up, and you get another one, and they're just, they self-seed a little bit like mad. So I let them bloom and then move them or throw them in the compost.
Right. There's still another one. The florindaes are still not even blooming yet.
Right.
And one of the things I like about them, they're really tough. They self-seed also, is that you can cut one and put it in a bouquet, and one is enough to scent the whole room. So the florindaes, look for those if you want to grow a late season primrose.
Mm-hmm. Monkshood is another one that I think, did it make, made one, two lists. Is it on yours? Oh, two out of three. I would like them because I consider them to be a less fussy delphinium substitute.
I definitely grow them and love them, so it's okay.
Yeah. So they're a tall, you know, they're a robust plant. Most of them are the toughest ones that I have the deep blue flowers. I have another one that's kind of a little variegated, strong word, but white with little suffused blue in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little bit less robust than my big blue one. But they are spectacular. They I don't do a darn thing to them, you know, except for hack them down